Pikachu! Pikachu ka Pika Pi. Pikachu ka Pika Pi. Pikachu, Pikachu, Pi. Pichu ka Picha Pika Pi. Pikachu, Chu Pi. Pikachu, Pikachu, Pika Pikachu, Pikachu, Pi. Pika Pika Pichu ka Pika Pi.
Hello, world, and welcome out to PCAPI Podcast. Today's going to be a bit unusual in that we're going way back into the past to cover an old episode of Pokemon, one of the lost ones from back when the internet crashed and failed me. It's taken me a really long time to get around to doing it, but the day has arrived, and it can be fun to go back and look at old episodes of Pokemon with the context of a future lens. And so today, for our anime episode review, we are covering episode 15, Battle Aboard the Saint Anne. We're going to talk about the early stages of Ash's character development. And I hope I remember all the jokes I made the first time and can get back into that mindset of where Ash was as a character way back then, because he's so different now that we're covering him in Hoenn. He's really night and day. Anyway, before we go poking into the past of the Pokemon world, a reminder that PCAPI Podcast is brought to you by PokePress. And right now on YouTube is the recording of his first live YouTube live show, a PokePress Q&A featuring record store day pickups and Pokemon music, show and tell, and many other questions that are on the viewers' minds. And if that's not enough for you, PokePress also has interviews with actors and producers and directors and gamers and people from all across the Pokemon fandom. Also a Pokemon parody music enthusiast. So check them out on YouTube at PokePress or at their blog page, pokepress.blogspot.com. Whatever way you like to engage with Pokemon, there is something on that website for you. In the meantime, what I've got for you right here on PCAPI Podcast is episode 15, Battle Aboard the Saint Anne. I can't believe we're all the way back here. This is so weird. Like, and not necessarily in a bad way, but, you know, visiting the narrative out of context and echoes of old jokes in my head I only half remember. It's fun to do, and if we could compare the two episodes, if I could find the old episode 15, like, I'd probably never do this. So I guess it's a catch-22, but if we could compare the two episodes, I do wonder what I'd pick out differently. When I covered those future episodes of Sun and Moon for my Patreon, it was kind of the same thing. It's, I know I'm going to be honing in on very different details when several years rolls around, and I have the wealth of context of Sun and Moon and the hyper-analyzing of all those characters and plot threads. It's going to feel like a very different episode that I record. And I'm sure that's going to be the case today. Because right off the bat, I'm having trouble remembering where we were in life. Episode 15. So we're in Vermilion City. Ash just won the Thunder Badge. Pikachu has decided his destiny on the never-evolving department. And yeah, everything's starting to come back to me. This was back when I was, like, doing the binge of, like, 3 episodes a week. And immediately after that episode where I was kind of high. Not what you think. It was not in the fun way. I had a super exciting trip to the emergency room earlier and spent the rest of the week, like, medically confined to my crummy apartment and unable to do more than lay in bed and count the cockroaches and stare at a laptop. So that's what I did. Figured I might as well get some podcasts out of it. I've said it before, like, in some ways this podcast serves as kind of a diary, because even when I'm not talking about my life, I can easily see how things were going, and episodes trigger sensory memories and things, and oh gosh, I was miserable back then! Indigo League, like, in some ways calls out memories of my adolescence, because that's when it was first airing and when I first got into Pokemon. But because of this podcast, it's also forever associated with that part of my life where I literally hated everything and hope was all but dead. Maybe I can ride over some of that with a third experience today. 2017 was not my year, but 2018 is proving to be marginally better, so... Anyway, Ash Ketchum and his stage of life. Like I said, he's in Vermilion City, he's at the harbor, and it's a beautiful day, and in the harbor is a magnificent cruise ship. And the kids would love a long, relaxing cruise. Sunbathing on the deck, seeing all different kinds of Pokemon, what a trip it would be, and one that they could never afford. Not without some luck, and their lucky day walks right up to them. Two Kogyaru, two high school girls following a unique fashion trend that eventually led to the creation of Jinx. We've talked a bit about Gongoro on this show, the fashion culture that Jinx is kind of poking fun at, homage to. Gongoro is sort of a way for Japanese young women to rebel against the stereotypical beauty, and it has a lot of branches. Like, especially in its heyday, the look was deliberately kind of ugly. Like in the my fashion doesn't exist to fulfill your sex fantasy sort of thing. And also a way to rebel against society. The traditional Japanese society is about sacrifice and duty and finding your social circle and group unity. Those values are still held today, but the Gyaru motto is kind of like Viva Jibun, long live the self. And yeah, people can view that as these girls are self-centered, or these girls want to take control of their own lives. It all depends on your point of view, I guess. And it's branched off into many subgroups. Some forms of Gyaru are a bit more sexualized, and some are a bit more unnatural and ugly, and some are done in, like, rainbow colors. But it all birthed from that same idea and grew out of the Kogyaru. Now, Kogyaru, when it started, was viewed really negatively, like, associated with shallow materialism and prostitution and promiscuity. These are the girls who hike up their uniform skirts and bleach their hair and, you know, over makeup and pepper in a lot of nonsense English. But for all the media then and now throw shade at the Gyaru girls for wanting to dress like this, they also fed into it at the time. So many fashion magazines sprung up around it and promoted it and fed it. So a lot of people feel it's become sort of a blame the victim culture, like you sexualize young girls in school uniforms and make it out like that's a good thing and you promote it and you sell it in your stores and then bemoan the fact that young girls are actually wearing these things and it does look sexy. So the Kogyaru or the Kogal kind of died out to a point. But as a subculture, it's evolved and kind of come back around, and sometimes in new forms. If you've watched anime, there's a fair bit of its influence there. AKB48 and all its sister groups and music, they've kind of taken some inspiration from Gyaru fashion. So that's your fashion education for the day. I'm not a huge fan of the look. It kind of scares me sometimes. But the more I look about it, the more I appreciate it. Fashion through world history actually has a lot of stories where the fashion developed as a form of rebellion in wartime or in oppressive or constricting societies or as an instrument of change that later changed the structure of society itself. And a lot of street fashions in Tokyo that are always ending up on those "Look how crazy Japan is" blogs, most of them have ties and roots to bigger social issues. It's kind of fascinating. It's the same thing with kawaii culture and Lolita and all their branch-offs. Here, though, Jesse and James are mainly adopting the look for the lulz, and because James does have very nice legs, like the little Sailor Moon sequence here is doing him all sorts of favors. Speaking of favors, these completely innocent and totally cool girls have a bunch of tickets to board the St. Anne and attend a prestigious Pokemon party with all the other cool kids. And they can't take advantage of them since they gotta hang out with their boyfriends. I am curious why they have three tickets when there's only the pair of them, like one more ticket and they could have invited their boyfriends. Also, if those tickets are legit, then this con of Team Rocket's had some heavy bankroll, but it's worth it for the costumes. After baiting the trap for the Torps, Team Rocket gives them the tickets and then changes back into regular clothes to answer a call from the boss. This was back when Giovanni actually wanted to talk to them. It's also back when we didn't really know who Giovanni was. In Generation 1, we didn't know that the Viridian gym leader was the leader of Team Rocket until the end, and maybe you wouldn't have known that coming into the anime. Depending on how fast you beat the game, anyway. But yeah, the fact that the Viridian gym leader and the leader of Team Rocket were the same person was a well-kept secret for a while, and a cool thing about the anime is that it does not reveal Giovanni's face until the exact moment in time that it mirrored the plot twist of Generation 1. So, Giovanni is looking super boss-like right now. We don't know much about this shadowy guy with the distorted voice, but we do know he's in charge. He's got a Persian, and Meowth is very jealous of it. The way he talks, it sounds like he used to be the favorite, or at least was in good standing. In theory, all three, Jesse and James and Meowth, might have been favorites and in good standing, but they have been failing a lot lately. That gave them a dip in the ranks. But right now, there's a major Team Rocket operation going on. We're about to get an episode with the Team Rocket organization. That is always interesting and sometimes a little creepy when you realize just what the resources are and how they're so widespread. Like, it's nuts. And remember when I talked about the bankrolled con that Team Rocket's running? It's not just about Pikachu this time. This is Team Rocket's bigger plan. Jesse and James, possibly some others, distributed tickets to many Pokemon trainers. And Ash thought he was special. I mean, I'm sure Jesse and James would not have let him out of this. But yeah, there's a lot of trainers that they've given the magical gifts to. But in addition to these Pokemon trainers, there's also a huge contingent of Team Rocket grunts. And once the boat's at sea, they plan a hostile takeover. No escape, and knowing Team Rocket, no witnesses. Well, into this hotbed of trepidation come our heroes. Ash, Brock, and Misty come on board and join a whole throng of Pokemon trainers in the ballroom, all with their Pokemon. There's also vendors and booths. It's like a Pokemon convention. I half expect there to be fan art. But the atmosphere is friendly. Ash is getting a little competitive, though, so good for him. A few battles are breaking out. And I forgot just how much Ash had to prove way back in Indigo, and how tough a time he had dealing with those feelings of insecurity and inadequacy. Like, Ash of Hoenn has the emotional capability of a young teen, even an older teen on some days. Some days he's a downright adult about his emotions and life. Right now, he's a 10-year-old. An actual 10-year-old, and all the good and bad that comes with that. He's like, me, 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 I want a battle. My Pokemon are better than theirs. Just constant. Man. Well, he sees a gentleman and his Raticate battling a Starmie using moves that it maybe shouldn't be able to do, but we're following Pikachu in this show. Who are we to judge? Clearly, rules are made to be broken. Like Starmie's jewel. The gentleman wins the battle when Raticate bites Starmie and breaks off a few chunks of its lovely red jewel. Like, I hope Nurse Joy can fix that. Do you just put on some super glue, or what do you do there? The gentleman here, I'm not sure how I feel about him. Like, on the one hand, his words are gracious, but there's something about him that feels patronizing, and I'm not sure how to read him. The reactions of the people around him are not especially positive. Like, the boy he battled isn't cheered up or shaking hands as equals or anything, and the crowd is sort of giving him hero worship treatment. And he's definitely playing up to it, which only stokes the fire in Ash's eyes. He jumps into the circle like, battle me, battle me, battle me. So it's Butterfree versus Raticate. I missed you, Butterfree. Welcome back. And Misty, in her usual fashion, is not optimistic. Like, does Ash even stand a chance? What's different than the entirety of Kanto and most of Johto is that this time Brock shuts her down. Like, yeah, it's actually a good match. It's like, we need to take a picture and remember this moment. Brock and Misty, as I've chronicled extensively, are kind of jerks to Ash, especially in this stage of the journey. But Brock has always been just a little bit more fair. And yeah, this time Ash is in an equal match. He's trained his Pokemon. He has at least some clue of what he's doing. Like, there's no need to rag on him, so Brock doesn't. Ash is even using tactics, calling for things like Stun Spore rather than, you know, just bash, bash, bash. And Ash probably could have won this match, but after Raticate has been completely immobilized, the gentleman calls off the match. Calls it a draw, he says. Ending the match is his prerogative, although most trainers would admit that ending the match is the same as you forfeiting. Like, that's just common courtesy. The match isn't officially over, but if you're the trainer who decided to call it quits, you take the loss. That's why it's a tough choice. And yeah, this gentleman looks like a nice guy, but it seems he's just concerned about his reputation. Rather end the game than let people see him lose. And Ash is, a little bit rightfully, super annoyed. But while he's dealing with that, James is walking the floor and meets the Magikarp salesman. This delightful entrepreneur. He tells James about a Pokemon gold mine, Magikarp, who lays so many eggs, and each of those babies lays 1,000 more. You'd have a whole Pokemon breeding bonanza. The only problem is, most people who aren't me find Magikarp completely worthless. It does evolve into Gyarados, so it's not entirely a lie, but if you're not willing to put in the work into evolving and training Magikarp up, then the turnaround profit is not so awesome, and Team Rocket is all about the ease. That said, a billion Pokemon? Even a billion Magikarp could overwhelm a foe. It's not Team Rocket's style, but can you just imagine tens of thousands of Magikarp descending on a building or an island or something, just bouncing and thrashing and tackling as they go? Like, the sheer numbers alone would make them a threat. I think there's potential here. I'm telling you, Movie 21 needs to have a Magikarp army. Get on it, guys. But yeah, it's not the get-rich-quick scheme that James thinks he's buying. But he's suckered in by the thought of easy money and the salesman's superior charisma stat. And we all know how this story goes, but you know, Magikarp hardly would have been the most useless member of Team Rocket. Like, really? And if Team Rocket had given half an effort to train it occasionally, they'd have had a Gyarados. And that would have been a game changer for Team Rocket. At the very least, you would have neutralized Misty. She, at this point in the series, could not have handled a Gyarados. And as long as they could prevent Pikachu's electricity or immobilize him some way, Gyarados could wreck the rest of the Torps. They could make water getaways, destroy public property. Like, this could have changed everything. Best laid plans of Pikachus and men. Well, James makes the purchase, and meanwhile, the Torps are gorging themselves at the buffet. Eat up, kids. You don't know when you're next going to be lost in the woods for weeks. Maybe stuff some rolls in your purse for later. While they're eating, the gentleman with the Raticate from before approaches, and this gentleman and his lady friend. Brock is smitten with the lady, but she and the gentleman are smitten with Ash's Butterfree, and so Ash learns about trading. The gentleman wants to trade Raticate for Butterfree. And again, little hard to read this guy, but I'm inclined not to like him. He might be sincere. Trading is a common practice, and it can build connections with other trainers between Pokemon. There's a lot of reasons trading is a good idea for both the trainer and the Pokemon in question. But it sounds like this guy is just trading up to get stronger and stronger Pokemon. Like, he saw Butterfree was about to beat his Raticate, so he stops the match, and now he wants to trade for the stronger Pokemon? It's a little suspect. And the person Ash might normally ask for advice is a little bit enamored. Brock is not thinking with his head at all, and so when Ash asks what he should do, Brock's like, yeah, trade, make friends, I want to make friends with her. So, Ash agrees, but he's still unsure. The process is quick and simple. Like, just like that, they press a few buttons on a machine and Ash has a new Pokemon. Just like James, who now has a Magikarp, much to the consternation of the rest of his team, especially since he used his teammates' money to help finance his little dream of a Magikarp gold mine. So now we've got two people who are regretting their choices in life and trying to do backsies on their Pokemon deals. James due to funds and pressure from the team, and Ash is having a bit of a crisis. He got pressured into trading Butterfree to a guy he doesn't even really know. And that might work for some trainers and some Pokemon. After all, just like real-world sports, sometimes you need to trade teams or coaches or get a new teacher, and sometimes that means taking a risk. Sometimes that means leaving what you know or saying goodbye to someone you love to work with in the hopes that something new will come out of it. But that's not how Ash and his team work. In these short 15 episodes, we've already established that Ash doesn't catch Pokemon just for the sake of catching them all. That's not what being a Pokemon master means to him. And if he can't have his team beside him, like in the case of Krabby being sent to Professor Oak's lab, he's beside himself with worry and despair. Ash's training style, bare as it is, involves building a relationship with his Pokemon and working out their personal issues. It's really, right now, the only part of the job he has any clue how to do at this point is handling their emotional states. And by trading Butterfree to a stranger, he's just betrayed the one thing he's good at. Moreover, basically every Pokemon he's caught so far is here because they want to train with him. Not anybody else. Like, maybe Pidgeotto's an outlier. That one doesn't talk much, but all the rest, like, Caterpie and Ash were best buds on day one. Bulbasaur would not have left the village for any other trainer. Charmander is definitely only here because of Ash. Squirtle is only here because of Ash. Pikachu, again, only here because Ash and the individual that he is. And at episode 15, I'd say Pikachu's not even in it for the training at this point. Like, he's just here to chill with Ash. They agreed to go into Pokeballs, or at least metaphorically do so, on the agreement that Ash would be their trainer. The anime version of the Pokemon world implies that there is some will involved into Pokemon being caught, and the little wiggles of the Pokeball is kind of that moment where the Pokemon's deciding if they really want this, and if they really, really don't, as Meowth has proven, they can fight it and not get captured. Like, some of them you don't even have to battle to kind of prove your worth. They're ready to go on a journey. And others will only agree to be caught under very specific circumstances after a particular trainer has proved themselves meticulously. So yeah, some Pokemon, totally okay with being traded and trying out a new trainer and seeing new parts of the world, etc. But at least 5 of Ash's 6? Absolutely not. So Ash has betrayed their trust and the only thing he stands for as a Pokemon trainer right now. He gave in to peer pressure and now he doesn't even know what kind of life he just got Butterfree into. Now, with a moment of clarity to think, Ash finds he's not okay with that. He chats a bit with Misty. She doesn't really get what he's feeling. Not that Misty's not close to her Pokemon, just Ash is still figuring out who he is and what's right for him. Until he does that and demonstrates it so that other people can see who he is, like, we can't expect Misty and Brock to just intuit and know psychically what's going on in his head or why his moral compass feels out of whack. They don't know what his moral compass is yet. They can't advise him on acting against his principles or out of character when they don't really know what his principles and character are all about yet. Because Ash himself doesn't know. This is the moment he decides. So Misty's observations to cheer him up aren't super helpful, but maybe that's good. Like, the fact that having a new Raticate and being a trainer like everybody else isn't cheering him up, that he still feels he's doing something wrong, even if everyone around him supports his decision? Maybe that's a lesson that speaks louder than anything else Misty could have said. And while he's thinking about that, the cruise goes on, and Team Rocket strikes. Legit scary Team Rocket, all hands on literal deck. And you think it's just Jesse and James? No. Drama is a prerequisite for being a Team Rocket grunt. There are costumes flying everywhere, disguises ripped and thrown willy-nilly, fabric flying everywhere you turn. No mottos except from Jesse and James, but yes, Giovanni definitely hires underlings with a flair for the dramatic. I sometimes wonder what it must be like to pull off these big group schemes when Jesse and James are involved. Like, everything's proceeding according to the mission brief, and then suddenly, prepare for trouble! I can just picture the other underlings looking around like, was that part of the plan? Should we be posing too? I don't understand what's going on. Anyway, all the members of Team Rocket have little vacuum packs strapped to their backs, so they start sucking up Pokeballs or threatening trainers to hand them over. Ash, being Ash, rallies the other trainers to try to fight back. And they start forming coordinated teams even, Pikachu teams and Squirtle teams and Charmander, in order to fight Team Rocket. Ash even turns his hat back for this. Oh my gosh, I forgot how much I missed that. He doesn't do it so much in Hoenn. I guess he's just hit that level of capability where nothing seems like a big deal anymore. I don't know. But anyway, one of the teams of Pokemon is a group of Butterfree, and Ash calls out his own Butterfree to help out, only to remember that he's got this new Raticate. He's super disappointed. And he flashes back to all the memories he has of Butterfree, of Metapod, of Caterpie. And with a sigh, he determines he's gonna get Butterfree back. But first, though, we gotta win the day. The cruise ship's guests manage to beat off the Team Rocket agents. Some go blasting off, some crawl away into hiding, Jesse and James being the latter. But the plan has failed, the danger is over. I should point out, for the ones who went blasting off, it is implied that the Pokeballs that sucked into their vacuum packs were retrieved before blasting them off the boat. It is never actually confirmed. Like, I didn't see it happen, did you? So the lack of sobbing trainers can only prove everyone got their Pokemon back, because otherwise this tale ended in real tragedy. So amidst all the chaos, a storm has come up, and giant waves are rocking the boat. Despite this place having turned into one big seesaw, Ash finds the gentleman from before and drags him over to the trading machine, wanting to do backsies. And that's gotta be a sucky moment for Raticate, like, I was the best Pokemon I knew how to be, what do you want from me, man? Like, nobody wants poor Raticate. But the gentleman is understanding enough, he doesn't press the issue, he's happy to trade back with Ash. Meanwhile, the waves are getting higher, the passengers are getting antsy, and the captain is lowering a life raft and abandoning the ship. I think we may have a problem here, guys. So Brock and Misty run up to Ash like, dude, we gotta go, the ship is sinking, we need to grab a lifeboat while we still can, and Ash is like, no, hang on, not until this trade is complete. I am gonna get Butterfree back even if I risk drowning to do so. Do you hear that, Rose? I will never let go! Like, the trade finishes, and Ash gushingly holds his Pokemon's Monster Ball again. Butterfree, will you forgive me? Just all of the emotions. For all of 2 seconds, when the boat lurches and the Pokeball falls and rolls down the hallway. Jesse, James, and Meowth are also chasing Magikarp's golden Pokeball as it rolls through the reeling ship. And finally, the ship capsizes. Everything goes head over heels and all our heroes and villains are knocked unconscious, while the St. Anne slowly meets its watery fate. And with that, Captain, none the wiser. Cliffhangers! Da-da-da! Kind of a strange place to be in, where the cliffhanger is answered in an episode that actually released before this one will. But, you know, that's how it works out sometimes. Thank you for joining me today for this look into the past at episode 15. It was pretty fun to do. I got to talk about early personality development for Ash and Japanese fashion trends, all sorts of fun things. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can visit us at peakappypodcast.blogspot.com, where you can also find the lovely episode that comes after this, and also we're on YouTube. I'm slowly getting all those episodes up. That too should hold the end to this cliffhanger, this two-part episode. It might be a little bit jarring to listen to this modern episode and then the past one, but there it is. It's part of what keeps this podcast interesting, right? And as always, you can keep up with most recent episodes of the podcast by subscribing to the RSS feed via things like iTunes and Zune and Podcatcher, etc. And as always, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at PeakAppy Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, this has been PeakAppy Podcast. Gotta catch 'em all.
Pikachu!